Hello. Thank you for tuning in. You are listening to ByteRadio.me's Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. For network or show information, visit www.byteradio.me or call 843-808-0777. And now, the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show with your host, Robert Sharp. Good day, everyone, and thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Today, my special guest is Dr. Lynn Robinson, and we will be discussing her new book, Loving to the End and On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. Dr. Robinson recognizes and encourages ways for anyone, everyone, to love beyond death in this well-researched, engaging, and compelling mix of personal narrative and forthright reporting on end-of-life care and miscare. Helpful for both families and medical personnel, it is part instructive manual, part counselor, and part love story. Her book gently guides us through the sadness and departure toward opportunity and love. Never demanding readers believe in an afterlife, Lynn instead offers personal stories of deathbed visions, after-death communication, near-death experiences, and end-of-life care. At bedside, a wife whose dying husband's spirit departs his body briefly goes with him, having previously been unconvinced of an afterlife, and somewhat in shock, she declares this single incredible event exceeds any and all of their considerable marital intimacy. You can find out more by visiting Lynn's website, which is www.lynnrobinson.com, and that's L-Y-N-N, Robinson.com, and I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so I'd like to welcome Lynn to the show. Good day, Lynn.
Well, good afternoon to you, too.
I'm happy to talk about loving and death. Kind of some things we don't necessarily go together, but they do in, when it comes to your book. So I guess the first place to start would be with the title, the idea of loving to the end and on. So can you talk a little bit about, you know, exactly what that means?
Well, in some ways I let people make that decision for themselves, but I can tell you what it means for me. And it means a couple of different things. One is that we never lose the love for people, whether or not they're in physical bodies. That's one thing. For me, because I have had communications with people who are no longer in physical bodies, I believe that we continue on in some way or manner. So loving is not ended at the time that we leave our physical bodies. What other people might say, we die.
Yeah. I was just going to say, you know, there are some, one of the things that I liked about your book is that you don't, the reader doesn't necessarily have to, you're not trying to sell the reader on, you know what happens after death, and in some of your experience. I mean, you provide experiences and allow the reader to make their own decisions, which I think is a good thing.
Well, thank you. I think so too. I have family members who aren't ready to go to the possibility of life after death, and that's fine. But I also know that there's so many experiences that make people feel better during the dying process, and you know, being able to snuggle up against the body of someone who is dying and feel the warmth until the warmth is no longer there, and your memory will never lose that. So whether or whether it's in actuality, you still capture it, and it's still beautiful and helpful and fills you full of that wonderful love stuff.
Yeah, well, you know, I've talked to many a guest who, you know, talks about the afterlife, and the one thing that seems to transcend all things is love, is that love connection. And it seems that that is, you know, again, it seems to, you know, go beyond space and time. Its existence seems to go on.
It certainly has felt that way to me in lots of different ways. I had a really unusual occurrence just during the past week, if you want to hear about it.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Okay. Well, I was, several days ago, was going through some old emails, and my eye caught one from a friend I hadn't talked to in quite a while, and I opened it up, and it was a story that I guess never made it into the book, but it's one that would have been comfortable in this book. And we had lunch with some other friends, and she, because of my beliefs and openness to how love affects us in so many ways, she said, I just have to tell you a story. And she told me about both of her brothers who had died of pancreatic cancer within a few months of each other, and that she was so worried about them, so she was appealing to her mother. And frequently, since her mother died, which was, 7-8 years prior to her brother's deaths, she would smell her mom's perfume from time to time and think, I'm in touch with mom somehow. And so because of that, she was saying, Mom, please let me know that my brothers are okay. Nothing happened. She went to bed that night, and about 3 or 4 o'clock in the morning, she awakened and could smell her mother's perfume. So she thought, oh, my goodness, you know, Mom's telling me things are okay, but she still couldn't get back to sleep, so she went in another room to read. She was sitting there really just sort of staring into space, heard a crash, looked across the room, and the picture of her mother and dad had fallen on the floor. So she took that as, Mom, this is, you know, you're telling me in two different ways the boys, my brothers, are okay. Now, the thing is that I ran across that email just a few days ago and sent it back to her. And said, I hadn't talked to you in a while, and I've had this book come out, and I don't think that it's in the book, but I just wanted you to see that. 2 days later, I found out her husband died that morning.
Wow.
Yeah. So when I saw her, because, you know, I went to the funeral, and when I saw her, I said, I can't believe sending you that note, and I have to think it was your mom saying ahead of time, everything's going to be okay. She said, oh, definitely. I know it was my mom. So whether or not it was her mom, she's comforted believing that it is. Of course, I believe with her, but not everybody has to. You know, they just have to know that sometimes you can have these feelings and they can be very, very comforting.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's the one thing when it comes to, for me, when it comes to religion, I'm not a religious person. I would, you know, put myself in that realm of spiritual, but, you know, and I used to find people who really adhered to certain dogmas as, you know, kind of like, you know, not seeing the total picture. So, but then I really, you know, after, you know, so many years of talking about spirituality, come to realize that, you know, if it brings them comfort, then it's right for them. And,
absolutely.
You know, and I have no right to even begin to question, you know, their choice of belief.
But here's the thing. The family I was just talking to you about are Catholic.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah,
you know, and so it almost doesn't matter which religious faith, because I have friends of all kinds of religious faiths in various countries and parts of the world. Some people have a proclivity to believe that we last beyond the physicality, and some don't. One of my favorite things to say is suspend your disbelief.
Mm-hmm.
As
yeah.
you're thinking about things that... And another thing is we're more than a physical body.
Yeah, and you had that in the beginning of the book, to, you know, for people, the reader, to just, you know, for a time, you know, just to kind of suspend that and just read it, you know. And
yeah.
So now the subtitle of the book is A Guide to the Impossibly Possible.
Uh-huh.
Again, is that just referencing, trying to open up to possibility?
Pretty much so, yeah. I think it's my way of tipping my hat to the people who think it's impossible, but asking them to be open to the possibility that it is possible. That's a lot of possible.
Okay. It is. Yeah,
it's kind of a little bit of my sense of humor.
Okay, that's good. And, you know, and it's, I mean, for people who, and it really does, would attract the eye of someone who, you know, thinks about impossibility. I mean, you know, there are some people who are guided by possibilities and what life could offer, and then there are those who sometimes look at things more restrictively as to more of the impossibilities of life.
I like that. Maybe that's one of the reasons I was guided to that phrase. I like your thinking on that.
Possibly. Well, I know both people in both realms. So, you're going to capture both. This particular book, is this, you wrote a book in the 90s. Now, is this particular book a sequel to that book?
Not from my point of view, no. It is only in the sense that in the earlier book, I did mention some things that happen beyond death, some stories that would even expand your intuitive capacities. It's only a sequel in the sense that I want people to think about our being greater or more than maybe what we're taught in school, more than a biological entity. But it's not really a sequel per se, no.
Okay, okay. So now I understand that you're a little bit into retirement age. Why write the book? I mean, why put this information out there? What inspired you to write this particular book at this particular time?
Well, as I'm having more and more of my friends die, I think perhaps that's what got to me. The fact that as a leader of a local group of the International Association of Near-Death Studies, I had so many people who have come to that group over the past 10 or 12 years, I've forgotten exactly how many years now, who don't have anybody they can talk to. Their families don't believe them. It's gotten a little better in the last three or 4 years as we've had more movies and more books, more physicians and nurses come out. But, you know, when you have somebody drive 4 to 6 miles, I'm sorry, 4 to 6 hours to a meeting because there's not one in their local area, because they want somebody to understand, they want somebody to answer questions. It just seemed like maybe I could reach more people by putting a book out there. And the very first chapter of the book is about one of my dearest friends. We were born 2 days apart, and in those years we were kept in the hospitals with our mothers for a few days. And her husband died, and she died very unexpectedly, and there were some remarkable experiences that occurred after her husband died. And with the experience that she had, she told me, you know, Lynn, it was the most incredible experience I've ever had. It was better than sex. So that was saying something. And, you know, she said it was far more intimate. And it changed her and the way she related to other people and was more open. And then in her own dying experience, there were so many changes that occurred for her and for her family and friends. It just, with people that close to me, it just seemed like a good time. And there's some stuff in there about my father. I think people need to understand it's not just stories about death and dying. It's also information about caring more effectively for the people you love during terminal illnesses. So there's specific information about that also.
Yeah, that's, I just, put out a book on the heart and soul of caring, you know, and just that the joys and challenges of being a caregiver, and a couple of the stories that were contributed, you know, many of them were, you know, the actual experience of being there in the, and you called it, in the book, you called it actively dying. I thought that was interesting. I had never heard that phrase before. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because, I mean, you know, when I normally thought of the process of dying, you know, and I've, you know, seen many of my friends die at various rates, you know, some quicker than others. But I never thought of the point of, quote, actively dying. So can you talk a little bit about that
period? I guess maybe I picked up that term when I was doing hospice volunteer work, because people can be in a terminal illness for a long time. But then when the rate of loss
decline.
Of body process increases and reaches some sort of constancy, it's termed actively dying. And you can begin to see the physiological changes in the body. With some people, it's faster than others. And there are specific things to look for in change of color in the extremities, change of breath rate, those sorts of things. And that's called the active dying process.
I had never heard that before, but, you know, I'm connected with an assisted living facility, you know, and a couple of the residents that I've gotten to know have passed on over this last year. And so it's interesting, and I'm going to just kind of keep my eye open for that, because this was just something I didn't have any awareness of, but it makes sense. Now, when you talked about your friend dying, that was Bev, correct? Wasn't that her name?
Yes, and I have to warn you that when you tell me names, I may have to stop and think about it, because I had to change names and use pretend names for almost everybody in the book. There were only one or two people who were already deceased whose names were the same. And even then, I was only able to use first names. So if I hesitate a minute, please understand. But yes, Bev is the first. Bev was my very dear friend, and she is the first chapter in the book.
Yeah, you explained, you know, several different, you know, those experiences. Those, you know, that one experience where when her husband died, and I believe it was her. She, like, her head on his chest or something, but she experienced that his leaving as well, and that's what changed her perspective, was that experience. That was the one that was even better than sex.
Yes. It was just amazing to her, because with her head on his chest, she felt his energy, his spirit, his whatever you want to call it, literally lift out of his body, and he took her with him just briefly. But that's the one that she said was one of the most remarkable things, and better than sex. I had something similar happen, I can't add the sexual component, but meditating on a cliff in Sedona, Arizona one time, and just losing consciousness of the area in which I was, and realized that I was out of my body, what I call flying free, with my mother, who had been dead for several years. And we were zooming through the universe, whatever. I don't even know what name to give it, except that it was not the physical earth on which I was sitting. And I felt so elated and excited to be with her, and you know, that our love was merged in this trip we were making together, until I heard somebody behind me say, "Lynn, it's time to go." And I popped back in my body, meaning I was no longer in this space I can't describe. I could feel my body. I even felt tears rolling down my face that prior to that I had no idea. So the physical me was ecstatic and crying about being with mother. Some other part of me was out somewhere in the universe traveling with her until I was back in my body. And it took me a few minutes to be reoriented and be able to, you know, get up and walk around and so forth. So that was the same kind of ecstasy, but not in the same sense my friend described it.
Well, you know, and again, you know, that love connection, it seems to be the critical element. Now, in your book, you talk about, I think it was after Bev passed on, that you had an experience with her daughter about sharing the love, the, you know, having Bev there. Can you talk a little bit about that? Because I think that would be something that the listeners would not only would enjoy hearing, but also something that they can maybe employ in their life, you know, with their loved ones.
Yeah, and I've not only done it with her daughter. This has happened to me with other people who have come to me and said, oh, I'm thinking particularly now of one woman who said, I just missed my son so much since he has died. And immediately he popped in. I never knew him, but he popped into consciousness and I could describe him. And with that, and she verified the description, and with that, just like with Bev's daughter, I felt this as though the top of my head, people who in chakras would say the crown chakra, had opened, and this energy that was so peaceful and I hate to keep using the word loving, but just you feel almost euphoric with wonderment and joy. And so that was coming in, and the same thing happened with this other woman. And I said, you know, he's sending you so much love, just as I was with Bev's daughter. And again, in that instance, I said, could you just hug me? Could we just be heart to heart and see if you can feel any of what I'm feeling? And I think actually the woman about whom I'm speaking felt more than Bev's daughter did. But they both got a little bit of, maybe they just got me and my joy and gratitude and euphoria. But maybe they actually got their loved one, too. I can't tell you specifically. I mean, this is something beyond what we learned in biology classes, you know?
Right. Yeah. Well, you know, the one thing that I'm certain of is that, you know, things that are beyond the measure of science. I mean, there are things beyond the measure of science, and something science cannot provide answers for. And just because they can't provide the answer doesn't mean it doesn't exist. You know, so I'm one of those that.
I agree, and especially since science keeps changing its mind about some things. You know, we just keep learning.
Yeah. Oh, we just discovered what you've been talking about for thousands of years, you know. Yeah. So, you know, and it's just one of those things where, you know, I think when, you know, if someone is can have an open mind and not adhere to, you know, the materialistic worldview, you know, and this, if it can't be proven by science, then it doesn't exist. If you can go beyond that and open up to that, then I think it. There are a lot of answers to questions, you know, that people have been asking for eons, and they just have to suspend their, you know, predilection to their disbelief. Yeah, exactly. So now, in the book, you talk about not only NDEs, near-death experiences, but also NDAs, near-death awareness, and also ADC, after-death communication. So can you, for the listeners, can you kind of describe the nuances between the three and maybe how they affect each other?
Well, they may not affect each other in an individual person unless you've had all three experiences, but a near-death experience, as has been defined, is when a person technically loses their lives according to the measurements that medical science makes. So their heart stops, their breathing stops, they do not register as being alive on all our current equipment. But then for some miraculous reason, it all starts up again. And so they've had what's called a near-death experience. And during that experience, many people are able to now tell us what they see, hear, smell, observe, and that's a near-death experience. And there's so much in the literature now. Raymond Moody is the one who is a physician, is the one who coined the term near-death experience. After-death communication is the kind of thing that has happened with me, where someone is no longer in a physical body, has been in some prior time in a physical body, but manages to send messages. It does not necessarily need to be verbal. It can be a picture or a smell, a sound. There's a story in the book about a friend of mine whose cat slept in a certain way, stroking her head in a way that cats don't normally do, but in the same way that her deceased husband normally would. And that was a kind of after-death communication. By the way, she and her husband are both PhD chemists. It's not like they're lightweight, non-rational thinkers. So that's that. What was the third term you wanted?
Well, it was the after-death communication.
That was the after-death communication.
Oh, I'm sorry. It was the near-death awareness. The awareness versus
near-death,
the experience.
Near-death awareness or... the other thing, near-death awareness is simply when one is in the dying process that you have an awareness that death is near. It's like the story I started telling you at the very beginning about the woman whose husband was dying, and I had, without knowing it, what was a near-death awareness. He had a near-death awareness in that he described for her some people he had seen, which is also called a pre-death vision, but is in this instance was also a near-death awareness. He knew that he was leaving his body. In his instance, they were not people he recognized. Frequently, it's people you know, family members, friends, and so forth. So maybe that helps your readers with this. The terminology, though, really isn't so important as the offering of those experiences, as the way love continues beyond death, and the way you may have an idea that you're going to move into a different awareness beyond death.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, it's like anything, the words can hardly describe sometimes experience, you know, what an experience
is. And at the same time, we do need some sort of vocabulary to begin getting a better idea of what people are talking about, and that there are gradations of the experiences.
Yeah, I agree. Well, we're about halfway through the show, so I want to take just a quick break, and I do want to invite listeners, if you'd like to call in and ask Lynn any questions, you can call in at 619-789-4359. And for those listening live in the chat room, if you have any questions there, feel free to post them. And then when we come back from the break, Lynn, I want to, you know, ask you about, you know, the... you know, for people who, you know, don't believe in the afterlife, you know, why would they or would they benefit from reading your book, and why? Okay, so when we get back, let's attack that one, okay?
Sure.
Great. Okay, everyone stay tuned. We'll be right back after this brief break.
Hello, this is Robert Sharp. I want to thank you for joining us
and hope you are enjoying today's show. Just a reminder that we have a wealth of information and resources available on our website, www.biteradio.me. There is a calendar of upcoming shows, along with an archive link that will give you access to more than 1,200 shows we have had over the past 7 years. Also on the site are links to the products and services we provide, books, greeting cards, photography, and a wellness store. Our show is available as a free podcast on iTunes, and you can subscribe for free at the iTunes Store, or even quicker, there is a link on our website homepage. We are also on many social media platforms, Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, etc., and we also have buttons to those platforms on the top of our homepage. Our website, www.biteradio.me, has much for you to explore and enjoy. I also very much appreciate you supporting our guests, and especially today's guest. And now, back to the show. Okay, everyone, thank you for staying with us. Again, today my very special guest is Dr. Lynn B. Robinson, and we're talking about her new book, Loving to the End, In On, A Guide to the Impossibly Possible. You can find out more about Lynn by visiting her website, which is www.lynnrobinson.com, and that's L-Y-N-N, Robinson.com. And again, I do have a direct link to her website in the show page description. Okay, so with that, we're back, Lynn.
Yes, and I need to correct you, though. It's LynnBRobinson.com. And the reason that that correction is important is there is a Lynn Robinson in Boston who is a delightful woman who's highly intuitive, and we have gotten confused in the past. So the B between Lynn and Robinson is very important.
Oh, great. Thank you. Sorry about that. And I'll make sure that that's all proper there for people to reference. Okay, so for people who, you know, say, you know, life is life and when we die and, you know, what can I gain by reading your book?
Well, there are a couple of different things they can gain. One is, as we've talked about, if they simply open their mind and give themselves an opportunity to read, they may get a memory of something that has happened and want to re-examine it, especially if they're open-minded. The other thing they can get from the book is there is information, as I said earlier, about caring for someone who is in the last phases of life. There's a lot of stress in most people's lives when a loved one is dying, and you don't think as clearly, you don't make management decisions about the process as clearly, and you don't have time to do the loving that is available at the end if you're stressed over all of that. So there's information and help with just what you are looking at, and stories. I use a lot of stories because I think people relate to that, of what to do and the ways to do it. So in addition to that, at the end of the book, there's a resources section. And I seem to always mention this, but there's a whole list of movies that have come out in the last two or three decades. So if you someone who wants to, you know, stream a movie or whatever and watch some of the stories that you can say are real or not, but many of them are based on real experiences that people have had, just put into fictional context and made into a movie. And it may give them something to think about and to look for in the future and to maybe open their minds a little bit. I know that in a few instances, you know, with people I love very dearly who have said, this is it, you know, life's over, hanging around with me and opening their minds over the years, they've become a little more settled in, well, maybe there is more. I don't believe it necessarily, but it could be. and they're a little more comfortable with the idea that there may be more, and that's good enough. I mean, truthfully, none of us are going to know till the moment.
Right. Yes. Yeah. That's a fact. That's a fact. So, it seems, you know, just, you know, from the stories that you tell in your book, you know, the experiences that you've had, and from a lot of the anecdotal types of stories that we hear, it does seem that there is something, no, can't necessarily say exactly what, but there is something, you know, beyond the death here. I know for, you know, when it comes to, you know, that end of life period, one of the things that was like very personal to me was when my mother was at that point in her life, or the ending of her life, and she was absolutely fearful. She was in life a very fearful, worrying type of person, but in that particular time, just scared to death of going to hell. You know, I mean, because of some, you know, decisions that she felt weren't, you know, the right ones. And to me, you know, if you, to end life in that state of mind, to me it's awful. I mean, it's just one of those things where I just can't imagine, you know, ending this chapter in fear. And, you know, and it seems that, you know, if we can switch it around to ending it with love, then it's just, even if there's nothing there, that but the last moments, so they can be peaceful and loving.
Yes, it can be. And you've reminded me of a couple of stories in the book. One of someone I knew personally, who again was raised as a Catholic and had not done anything religiously for a while, and on her deathbed, in the last 24 to 36 hours of her life, she asked for a priest to come and give her the rites of end of life. And she ended up smiling at everybody, and she was not an effusive, lovey-dovey kind of person. And people would come in and she'd say, "I love you, thank you for being here." And so there was this change that occurred for her. And then a story that I read and included in the book of someone who was in ICU and not expected to live and asked to be baptized. And they brought in some kind of tank and some kind of lifting apparatus and got this person out of the bed by lifting him and removed all of the, you know, the equipment that was attached to him to keep him going, and put him in the tank, and the minister was there to baptize him, and they got him out and they hooked him back up to his oxygen and whatever. He died not long thereafter, but he died just gloriously happy. So there are, and then there's another instance I can think of a very famous scientist who did believe, and his wife did believe, in some kind of afterlife, and they had read a lot of esoteric literature. She had been in a coma for several days, and he was reading to her from the Tibetan Book of the Dead, and when he got to the part about the bardo, which is sort of in between life and death in that culture, in that tradition, she opened her eyes, sat up, and said, "I want to tell you about that. That's where I am." Talked to him, closed her eyes, laid back down, and her stepson is the one who told me the story, and she never spoke again. So there are people who, when they get into that ending period where there's not a lot of consciousness, may have that kind of experience of moving from one phase to another and getting there, feeling better, not having that negative experience.
Yeah, you know, and that was one of the things that, as I was reading your book and reading about the different stories and examples, you know, was that, you know, during that phase that dying phase, that, you know, it seems that, you know, visions that the people would have or experiences, it seemed that the mobility between dimensions was easier. I mean, I guess, and maybe it is the consciousness getting kind of out of the way to allow that, do you feel?
Well, we certainly have no physical restrictions when we are talking about the spiritual part of ourselves. And so I would think that, I'm not even sure I would use the term mobility as much as flow, maybe. A flow of awareness that seems to have a lot more freedom to it, a lot more flexibility. I'm seeing, like, I'm sorry, but I do this kind of thing sometimes. I'm seeing, like, beautiful waves of color and sound, and it's just a flow that can ebb and wane and move around. And I think that's probably what we do.
Fluidity, very much, yes, very much. So in your experience with, you know, and you've had many experiences with people, you know, at that particular time, you know, of end of life, is there, what would you say is the most important actions or demonstrations that people can do? Because, you know, when you talk about, like, with Bev and her husband, you know, and someone being that close to death and like, hearing, putting your head down and hearing the you know, the breaths until there was no breath. For some people, that's scary as hell. You know, I'm going to be honest. I'm one of those people where, you know, when it comes, I mean, you know, when I come, you know, it came to my father's death, I was, you know, I was able to, you know, hold his hand and, you know, and be, you know, that close. But the idea of, you know, being there very intimately for that passage, that was something that, well, you know, for me, I don't know. For me, it was not something that I really wanted to experience. I truly believe my father knew that, because he passed on when I went out to dinner, even though I had been with him for hours and hours and hours and hours. You know, so, you know, I think there was that knowing that, you know, I'm not going to do this to Robert. But for some people who maybe, you know, aren't as comfortable with that close intimacy, what would you say to them to help kind of highlight that love, that loving moment?
Well, there are two things. First is, you indicated that you were gone when someone did leave their body because you felt he didn't want you to be uncomfortable. That happens a lot. That's not...
Okay.
Yeah, that happens, that someone will wait. I don't know how they know, but the person who's dying manages to wait until someone who they feel will be uncomfortable at the actual passage, until that person has left. I know of people who've left and, you know, they've been there all day and they say, I'm going to go home and take a shower and I'll be back. Mm-hmm. And the death occurs while they're gone because the person, for whatever reason, seems to know it and doesn't want the loved one to be uncomfortable. So that does happen. If you are uncomfortable and you simply cannot be there, you know, the person is going to most probably feel your discomfort if you're there. So, and some people can't look at a body in distress and watch those ending times, and the breaths get difficult to take, and the body actually, parts of the body actually start to change color. I mean, there are definitive things that can be uncomfortable for some people to observe. Don't do it. Stay away.
Yeah.
Bring that person into mind and heart and just send loving thoughts and remember the times that you've had fun together. And just as you would wish a friend leaving for Europe bon voyage, do the same thing. And we've already talked about the fact that the person who leaves their body isn't really even confined to their body. And there will probably be some awareness of that love. I mentioned in the book where when a Brazilian shaman friend of mine died, he was also a consultant to the Smithsonian with a PhD, but he was also an indigenous shaman, so he's quite an interesting man. And when he died, I had some awareness as I slept, but awakened to the idea that I just sense him in the room.
Mm-hmm.
And the next morning when I was checking email, I had an email saying that he had left his body, died about the time I had that awareness in the room. I have a hunch a lot of people around the world did. He was very skilled at understanding being more than a physical body. So my point with that is, he lived in Washington, D.C. I lived, you know, in the southeastern part of the United States, and there he was in the room. So if you can even think about the fact or the possibility that you don't have to be in the room with the physical body, if you're not comfortable with that, then don't make yourself uncomfortable or risk the possibility of the dying one being uncomfortable when you can sit somewhere else, bring them to mind and to heart the way you like to think about them, and
mm-hmm.
send love that way. And of course, religious traditions have had prayer traditions, which are similar. I mean, it's all part and parcel of the same thing, I think, anyway. Does that help? Is that
what
you were looking for?
Well, yeah, it does, you know, and it makes sense. And you know, I've when it comes time, you know, for me to like funerals, you know, I don't like funerals because I would much prefer to, you know, remember the person with life, you know, and for me, you know, when you're talking about kind of bringing in those memories, those moments, to me, that's, you know, that's what I want to have foremost in my mind are those moments, you know, and I think for me, it's just easier to grasp and hold on to and cherish those if I don't have that vision of, you know, someone laying out in a casket. I mean, to me. But then again, that's me, and that's, you know, the way that that's the way I roll, you know, with that kind of thing. So,
yeah.
But and you know, and I'm sure there are people out there like that. But then, you know, there are some, I know some people who nearby who just, you know, for them, you know, visitations and funerals and you know, being with someone, you know, to the last moment is something that they're comfortable with, you know, and that's fine. You know, I think it's just maybe the different way that we choose to have those loving memories, maybe.
I totally agree with you, and I think everything you've just said is very important. We don't all relate the same way in walking around in a physical body. You know, some people prefer to hold hands, some people don't. Some people like hugs, other people don't. And so I think being true to yourself and being comfortable so that you can allow the good feelings is really important. I think you brought up a very important thing. I appreciate that.
Yeah. Well, now, when I read about that shaman kind of appearing in your room, you know, in the wee hours of the morning, it just brought into mind. I had several friends who have had relatives who have passed and have had that very same kind of experience where the person will kind of, I guess, visit them before, you know. you're like, I'm on my way out, or I just left and just wanted to say, hey, you know, I'm here. See you later. It's been fun, kind of thing.
Yeah, and you brought up something else. Brought to mind something else. It is amazing the number of clocks that stop at the moment of someone's death, and in different cities. And it is also amazing the number of dogs who will howl at the time someone dies. A lot of servicemen, when they die in war or combat or whatever, and their dogs are at home, the dogs will howl. And the family later finds out that when the dog was just howling and howling or barking and barking, and then they get the notice of the death, the dog was doing that at the moment that the loved one died. And you know what? The loved one may have been right there present in the room, and the dog had the awareness and the people didn't.
That's exactly what I was thinking when you said that. You know, maybe they did that one, you know, especially if they were close to their pets, you know. I mean, it's like you're going to give your, you know, favorite dog or cat a, you know, hey there, thank you very much, you know. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was the case.
Yeah, there's a lot of documentation of that.
Oh, amazing. So, yeah. Well, if there's anything that you want for readers to take away from reading Loving to the End and On, what would that be?
That would be to love openly, audaciously, bravely, regardless of the circumstances of the health of another. That love doesn't stop when the heart does or when the breathing does. It continues. Whether you can communicate with that person or not, the love never goes away. And it's one of the treasures of life that can keep you sane and happy and looking for more.
Yep, absolutely. Well, that, you know, having that expression of love, I truly believe, is, you know, not only ends this life well, but also starts that next chapter in the same frame of existence. You know, you end it with love here, and you begin it with love there, wherever there is, if there is a there.
Yeah, I'd also maybe suggest that if they've had a glimmer of something like this happen in their lives and they've never talked about it, to risk talking about it with a friend, you know, to call into a show like this, or go to a conference. Like IONS has a big conference every year; it's coming up soon. Terry Daniels has started something called the Afterlife Conference. Terry was living close to here when her son died, and heard about the group that I facilitated. And she now lives out on the West Coast, but because her son started talking to her, somebody said, "Oh, there's this group you need to go attend because they'd probably be open to it." And so she did, and now she's become a hospice chaplain, and she started the Afterlife Conference, and she helps other people. So, you know, she reached out, and her life has taken a totally different turn. I don't know that would happen to everybody, but there could be the satisfaction finding out that, wow, I did get a message, or I can love. So just, you know, if you just take a little risk, it might help.
Yeah, exactly. You know, and the thing is, and you know, I agree with you. I mean, to some it can be a risk, you know, depending on your circle of friends, family, acquaintances. But there is so much comfort in being in a community or part of a community that has had similar experiences, has an understanding, and there's just a lot of comfort in that, and people shouldn't be afraid to seek that comfort.
Well, you know I agree with you because I took the risk of writing one book 20 years ago and waiting writing another one now, and people do. And, you know, I've got 3 degrees in business. I've got a bachelor, a master's, and a PhD in business. So I'm not the person that one might expect to be talking about these things. And that actually helps some people because they can say, well, you know, she does have this practical side to her, and yet here she is talking about being conversant with dead people. And so, you know, it gives them an opening that others might not have. But I would say to you that you can find a lot of people who you expect to be grounded in the sciences. I mean, look at all the people who are into quantum physics and move from quantum physics, for instance, into metaphysics. And because we really are all seeking to understand what life really is and if there are boundaries or not.
Yeah, yeah, I agree. And I've had quite a few doctors, psychiatrists, medical doctors that have, you know, in one, you know, have lived a life of, you know, doing fine without, you know, spirituality or metaphysics, you know, as part of their life. And then after a very personal experience, their worldview just turns upside down and they just basically recognize that, you know, this was real, you know, this, what I experienced was real. And, you know, because of that, I really, because of their scientific background in that experience, they have to try and reconcile, you know, some of the, of their training to their experience.
They absolutely do. And you've reminded me of what I think is a very amusing story. A friend who taught parapsychology, a PhD in psychology, and he taught parapsychology, which is the kind of thing that we're talking about, but didn't really believe it so much as taught it from an academic perspective of this is a possibility, we can do these, you know, we can try to do all these proofs, da-da-da-da. And he was a runner and had been running early in the morning going home and had, I've forgotten if it was a small stroke or a small heart attack, but anyway, fell in his driveway and couldn't get up. And the cat from across the street came running over, smelled him, went to the front door of his house and created such havoc at the front door that finally, after just a few minutes, the wife came to the door and the cat ran back to her husband. She called 911, he's still alive. And that put a whole new perspective on parapsychology for him. So you never know the form that it's going to take.
No.
To allow you to suspend your disbelief.
Exactly. You know, and, you know, for people like you with one particular form of training and then experience, you know, for bridging that divide, apparent divide, you know, for some people is the perfect opening for them to open up their mind, you know, to be able to say, okay, let me consider, you know, consider what the possibly possible could be.
Absolutely.
Well, thank you, Lynn, for your time. I've really enjoyed speaking with you, and I enjoyed reading your book. Lots of those stories in there are they're just great stories. You know, I mean, they're great examples, and I think if people read those and then just look around in their lives, they'll see similar things going on around them, and that can be very heartening.
Well, I hope so. I hope it's very heartwarming for people. And I can't let you get off without mentioning that you can get it at Amazon and Barnes & Noble online. And so I hope people will take a look at it. And those who enjoy it, even leave a nice note online. That'd be great. If you go to my website, www.lynnbrobinson.com, there's a contact page. If you want to leave me a message or ask a question, I'll take a look at that. I don't look at it every day. I'll be honest about that. But I'll be happy to.
But that's okay. It's a great way to get there. So, and I have corrected the link in the show page description. So it does have lynnbrobinson.com.
That's
so people
good.
Can just click on that link. Got that.
Otherwise, my friend in Boston will think, why this question?
Yeah, what is she doing? Okay, well, thank you again, Lynn. I really enjoyed speaking with you.
I appreciate it very much. Thank you.
My pleasure. Again, everyone, today my special guest has been Dr. Lynn B. Robinson, and we've been talking about her new book, Loving to the End and On, The Guide to the Impossibly Possible. Again, you can find out more by visiting her website, like we said, www.lynnbrobinson.com. And again, that link is available in the show page description. So everyone, I want to thank you for joining us for this edition of the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. And until we meet again, thank you for tuning in. You've been listening to the Bringing Inspiration to Earth show. Be sure to visit our website at www.biteradio.me. That's BITERADIO.ME. You can also find us on Facebook and Twitter at Byte Radio Me, and our shows are also available as a free podcast from iTunes. And until we meet again, remember to be a bright light by bringing inspiration to your world and to the lives of those you touch.
Hi, I'm Alice, and I own several art supply stores. And my secret to running a successful business is making my employees smile. Because a smiling employee is a happy employee.
Nothing's more rewarding than seeing your employees smile. As the nation's leading dental benefits provider, Delta Dental makes it easy to find the right benefits plan. So keep your employees' smiles healthy. Choose Delta Dental of South Carolina for your small business. DeltaDentalSC.com.